Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where conversations about work and money don't cause stress-related balding. And as for male pattern balding, sorry, fellas, we can't really help you with that.
I forgot to do the roof of the mouth, the tip of the tongue. Shout out to Tiff to get my vocals correct, but hopefully y'all can bear with me. And also be sure to join our email list so you can review our new Paychecks and Balances 15-minute money plan, as well as actionable work and money tips and interesting reads to help you get ahead in life and on the email. To sign up, get the free goods, visit paychecksandbalances.com/email. Again, that's paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And on today's episode, we're taking a break from the financial focus to chat with Jeff Johnson about how he made the career change from IT auditor to social media manager. Again, IT auditor, dog, to social media manager.
Representing.
And he's now landed at one of the most well-known sports hubs on the internet. So there are gems galore in this episode. And Jeff, he's just a really relatable guy, man.
Yeah, you know, auditors in the building, that's what we do, trying to prove to y'all that we can be your neighborhood-friendly auditor. So I appreciate Jeff for holding it down for the crew love.
And so there are some slight moments of Skype struggle early on in the conversation, but the internet gods ultimately let us be great. Now let's get into our chat with Jeff and hope you enjoy.
For those of you who know Rich and I from way, way, way back in the time, you'll need no introduction to today's magnanimous guest and former co-writer with us during our heyday as relationship bloggers, the man who really needs no introduction, Jeff Johnson, whom you may have seen covering red carpets and press junkets for various outlets, including NBC News and the YBF. Jeff now hosts the Nonstop Culture Show podcast and YouTube, discussing the latest in pop culture and digital media. He's also an on-air host of Fan Bros and correspondent producer for Bleacher Report. Retweets are not endorsement, but the views and waves allegedly are all his. Big fan, first time, long time. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
What's up, bro? What's going on?
Yeah, it's good stuff to get you on the podcast, man. I know that this is long overdue. How long we've been talking about this? For like years now?
Seems like years, decades, eons. But yeah, we here. Good to go.
So beyond Marcus's fantastic introduction, is there anything else you wanted to mention about your background for the people?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I've been in the online space for probably over a decade now in many shapes and forms, and you know, constantly evolved in what I did, and I'm here now. So I think that pretty much covers it.
And it's crazy because we have this long history where we're both writing for a relationship blog, and I know that we've kept in touch around other things as it relates to social media and branding and so on, but this isn't always what you were doing full time. So before you ended up in this land of social media, what were you doing for work?
So I was a technology consultant. So I was doing that for years. So almost 9 years, I want to say, plus. I went to school for computer science, graduate and undergraduate, and somehow ended up at a big four firm doing technology consulting, and then transitioned to Comcast. And I was doing that for a majority professionally since we knew each other. And for about 9 years. But throughout that time, I was always doing something online, whether it was writing, social media management. Then I transitioned into doing stuff on camera, and it just continued to build and build on the side until one day I realized, yo, I could probably do this as my main job and I would like it a lot more than what I was doing then. So that is one of the avenues that started my journey to where I am now.
And so taking a quick step back, what exactly does a technology consultant do? Because that could be a lot of different things.
It's anything you want it to be. And, you know, Marcus knows where I'm coming from. Depending on what your company does, like mine was primarily in compliance. So it was compliance and it was advisory. So let's say your company is functioning a certain way. My group would come in and evaluate it and say, and based on best practices, what you should do in order to gain maximum efficiency. Make sure that you're in compliance with federal and local standards as it's applicable. And just when I transitioned to Comcast, it was more so advisory projects where internally we would have certain initiatives going on and they would bring us on from a technological perspective to say how they can improve.
Got it. And so you've been doing this for a number of years. When did you start to have that feeling of, yo, man, I think I want to do something else with my life, full time, at least?
Man, I want to say, I won't say for the whole time I was working.
Even if you did, that'd be real.
Well, here's the dilemma that most of us face. We're good at something. We're good at our profession. We could wake up and do whatever X is, which is your profession, but do you really love it? Do you wake up in the morning and say, okay, I got to go to work, or man, F this job. I don't want to go in today. Like, do you feel any type of angst, emotional anxiety pressing you when you go to work in the day on your commute, counting down the time? Like, when time, I feel like time moves at different speeds depending on what you're doing. Whoever said time flies when you're having fun was 100% spot on.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll where I'm at work now, and I'm like, damn, it's 3 o'clock already? I got to do all this other stuff. Whereas at some of my other jobs, it would still be, we would still be in Wednesday.
Yeah.
We would still be 3 or 4 days ago. And I'm like, yo, when can I go home? But I would say after the financial crisis. So I was working around 2007, 2008. And for anybody who was in the workforce during that time, you know how hectic it was.
Terrible.
Literally walking in, the person on the right and the person to your left are gone. And of course, the work still has to get done. So you're doing double and triple the work with no benefits or promises of a raise or any type of promotion. One project, I lost my manager and my senior. So if I was an associate, I lost the next two levels directly above me. And I ended up having to lead a global initiative. I mean, it helped there years prior, but this was the type of stuff that I was dealing with. And just going through after that, you know, I'm continuing to go through. You have an idea of what you want to be when you get into a job. Yeah, I'm going to put in all this work, and I'm going to get promoted every 2 years, and I'm going to be a leader in this company. And then varying factors happen, and you sit around and it's like, all right, this, my expectation versus the reality is pretty off. I felt that in my first job, and even then, probably 5 years before I made the jump, I wanted to make the jump. But I spoke to some recruiters. Rich, I probably spoke to you a few times. I've spoken to you about my journey throughout the journey, and you helped a lot with that in terms of your position. But the first time was in, I would say, 2012, when I ended up at Comcast. I wanted to make the jump into media then. But coming off the financial crisis and getting some other advice from headhunters and people who will tell you, there's people who have years of experience doing what you want to do now with no professional experience who can't get a job.
Yeah.
So you may want to get a job that is a stepping stone to that career. And that's one of the reasons why I chose Comcast, because it was a media company. So I knew that I could get in, be out of New York on the NBC side, and learn the skills that I needed so that if I did want to make that jump years in the future, I'd have a better foundation to do it. And I started working in Comcast. I thought it was something that I thought I was home, and I realized that I was still, it was like Airbnb. It felt more like Airbnb than an actual home where I was on borrowed time. And other factors, you know, I've spoke to you at length and you too, Marcus, about the fallacy of performance reviews. How I feel they're structured to keep you at your current position without promoting you in rank so that you can get the most out of somebody before they leave or try to stick it out and get promoted. So I ran into a lot of those things that kind of disillusioned me from the whole field. But the other factor was I was getting better at the media side. I kept getting opportunities. I kept getting paid opportunities. I kept getting more exposure. My skill was developing at a rate above my dreams. And I realized, you know, I'm at a position where I don't need to work a job I don't like. I can take this chance on myself. And if I fail, the worst case is, you know, I tried. I never say I didn't try. So around that time was when I really felt like I needed to make the jump. Well, it was time.
And at any point during this time, did you either, because we're really big on, you know, mentoring, but it sounds like you had more of a network side. Was there someone that was helping you along the ways, or was this self-motivated?
It was both. I would say I never had a formal mentor, but, you know, I always had people in my life who were in the field who were assisting me in my journey and giving me advice. So I guess that is the definition of a mentor, right? So I can't really say I went without mentorship. There were people who helped me. I got a lot of help on the media side. You know, shout out to Claudia Jean and everybody else that was there who helped to groom me on that side. Because I was, you know, even now, I'm still pretty green in the field, or a little green. Maybe it's like lime green, like a lighter version of green, right? So I'm still pretty green where I don't have years and years and years of experience, but I've excelled and advanced in that role at an exponential rate quicker than people who have been in the field. But from her being a casting director and a talent producer, showing me what I needed to do in order to advance and really do the things that I wanted to do in front of the camera, and building my social media presence, speaking to people like Rich, who would help me on the actual job side and preparing resumes and really plotting my path and saying, all right, if this is what you want to do, these are the steps that you have to take. So it was getting that help to procedurally, and then in myself wanting it. You got to want it. You know, yeah. I was fortunate to be in a position where I didn't have a family. I didn't have those extenuating circumstances which said, you know, like our parents' generation, yo, you got to just work this job and make this money because you have to support your family. I was in a position where I could make that jump, and it was mostly on myself. All the risk was on me.
Right.
The other thing is, man, I refused to be in a position where I was working a job I didn't like. I'm sorry, maybe that's idealistic, but I didn't want to do it anymore.
Nah, that's real, man. It's real because a lot of us do that. And I think about what you were saying earlier, where there's things that we're good at and we can go to work and we can do them and they can make us money, but they're things that aren't ultimately fulfilling. And yo, bro, I think that that's unhealthy after some point in time. And I can remember being in a job back when I was living in the city, and I was in this HR generalist / recruiting job, and it got to a point where I felt anxious going to work in the morning. Like before I even knew what was going to be on the docket for the day, I was already anxious because I didn't enjoy the work. And that takes a toll on your health.
It does. And if I wasn't going to the gym on a regular basis, and, you know, I ain't no WWE superstar or anything like that, but, you know, it's health and wealth, right? So whatever, you know, insert cliche here, but it does help to be active and to do some type of physical activity that keeps you at worst level, because you got to release stress in the most constructive ways possible.
That's key, constructive.
In the most constructive ways possible. You know, it may be medication for some, natural medication for some. It may be, you know, it's either Bob Marley or like Tony Horton, right? You either your weed or you're doing both. But I had that outlet to work out and do all of that. But yo, it's a scary feeling, man, waking up and just dreading going to a place to work. One of the things that took a toll on me when I was working at Comcast is Comcast is headquartered in Philadelphia. And in my group, because I was there so long, I worked almost 4 years, a little over 4 years there. In my consultant group, I was the only New York person there. Eventually it became that Philly, everybody was stationed in Philly and I was the only one. So when we had certain projects, I always had to be in Philly.
Oh.
And remember that I was always in Philly. Like in 2015, I want to say the first 6 months of the year, I was in Philly Monday through Friday, living out of a hotel. I was podcasting. I would bring all my podcast equipment with me in a duffel bag. It looked like I was moving weight across state lines. Doing all of this, but I had all of this packed. I would record podcasts out of hotels. This sounds like a mixtape come up story where I become a platinum award, Pulitzer Prize winning artist. But this was what it was like. I had to be dedicated to the craft and build myself up. Like I was bringing my stuff, podcasting on the road. I would try to shoot down because it was close, because I'm in New York, so I could shoot down on certain days if I had events. My first red carpet experience when I covered Selma, that was a day I was supposed to be in Philly. And I was just like, yo, I said whatever I had to say so that I would go down at night, do that, and then come up the next morning. And it took its toll on me, man. It really did. And to the point where I'm somebody who liked traveling, and I hated traveling because I lived on the road. And I understood what people meant when they used to say traveling for work is glamorous until it's not. Until you become homesick and you just want to chill and be in your own bed for a weekend for a change. And that really weighed itself on me. It was a heavy weight on me, a burden. The other thing was that feeling that your work isn't appreciated and that you're not appreciated as a person and as an employee, where they set goals for you. And then when you meet or exceed the goals, they move the goalposts just because they feel as if they want to get a certain amount out of you. And if they get it from you, they want to take more and more and more. And there were certain situations where I knew my time was up because based on the way it operated in that group, every 2 years you had a decision. It was a reevaluation. I think that's something that's good, especially for your listeners in the job space. And I know you spoke about it. You guys have spoke about it before. But this idea of every 2 years should be an evaluation of where you are in your job and what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you get a job, right? That first year, you should be head down, working, learning everything. Learn to be good at what you do, what you were hired to do. Be good at what you were hired to do and learn the craft, learn it. And after the first year, you should have an idea of what you want to do. Do you want to get promoted? Do you want to move in the company? Or do you think you are better served elsewhere? And in those first 3 to 6 months, you start plotting it out. You do your research. You see what you have to do to get to where you need to go and then work on it for the rest of the year. So by the end of the second year, you're prepared to launch into the business or go get promoted or leave. And that was something. And when I got to that position, after a while, I knew I didn't want to be, I wanted to go into the business, but I felt like once I announced it, there was a timer set on me. Like, okay, he doesn't want to be here anymore, which is the paradox because that's what a lot of companies are built to do, for you to be used as an asset elsewhere. So if you take that opportunity, that doesn't mean you don't want to contribute to the company. It's just, I'm going down the road you said to go to get to the destination. You know. And when the veil was uncovered and I saw a lot of the corporate America stuff that really grates on me, I was completely disenchanted with what I was doing, and it was time to go.
So I'm going to get this in the show notes, but there's an article that makes people angry every time I share it. So this is the perfect time to talk about it. But it's from Forbes. It's talking about entrepreneurs, and it said employees who stay in companies longer than 2 years get paid 50% less, because they were talking about it's like an apartment. So you get all those great apartment deals when they bring you in, then they're like, you live here now. And so everyone that they were bringing in was getting 10 to 20% raises. And then employees that work in these companies on average were only getting 2 to 3%. I think even at the top of the curve, they were just seeing a 5% raise each year. Another thing that I heard recently, and I guess it's kind of stuck with me because I've repeated it a few times, is this financial blogger was actually talking about how she tries to encourage young people to pay off loans sooner. You talked about investing in yourself, which I think is also an investment. But she said she looks at it because they can't look at it long term. So mm-hmm. She said, look at it like you're buying back your time. And she was saying that I think she used an example of just putting $25 more each month. That would be the difference between paying off the average school loan at 35 versus 27. Now, I was a little shocked and appalled of why she chose 35 and why that seemed old and elderly, but that is the number that she used. But I think in this scenario, when you look at it, that 2 or 5 year plan, and you're looking at it as an investment in yourself, you really can buy back that time, because that's probably the most fungible or most difficult thing to recognize. It's also tends to be the thing that we value the least. I was doing an interview recently, and they were talking about living to 150. They had read some article about people living to 100. And I jokingly, but then I talked to my father and don't know how serious I was, but they were like, oh, what would you do if you lived to 100 or 150? And I have a few people in my family that have. But I was like, I think I got less years ahead of me than behind me. And what that does is it's made those years, I don't look at it as morbid, it's made them more valuable. Like, the year between 35 and 36 is much more precious to me than the year between 26 and 27.
Oh, definitely.
What steps or tips would you recommend for people who want to get their time back? Like, was that something that applied to you? So as you started to make that investment in yourself, was that true investment? Like you had 6 months of savings or you're like, you know, F it, I'm out.
Well, all of those recommendations for 6 months of savings and emergency funds, they're 100% right. And I 0% applied it to myself. Because, you know, it's, here's the thing. And I know you can find an article or you've read articles about it, how, especially for Black people in America, it's a lot easier said than done stacking money. And it is because we tend to always have a family situation that comes up, or two or three. We don't really have as much generational wealth. So for us to save like that, a lot of times in my experience, you are making a legit business decision where if that help comes around from family, you can't provide it and you got to focus. And everybody's situation is different. But just speaking for myself, I made a lot of, I would say, improper financial decisions just in terms of youth. Because you, when they say youth is wasted on the young, I get what they mean. Because if I knew, you know, or another cliche, if I knew then what I knew now, I'd probably save a little bit extra more and not have bought certain kicks or food that I didn't need or blew money here and there. But that's the part of being young, is enjoying your life and enjoying your money too. So I don't really regret it as much. It's just when you get older, that's when you start clamping down. But for me, I always got to the point where I'm always team file taxes early. Like once I get all my W-2s, once I get everything by February 1st, I am ready to go. I'm ready to go and get all my taxes filed so that I have that money and I can put it away. But there was always something. A car breaks down. You know, I'm basically paying off my credit cards because it really acted like a loan, where I got into the cycle where I got my tax return, paid off my credit, went to a zero balance, and then started over again. Or I made a big purchase that I didn't have the money for at the time, and I'm paying it back with my tax return or any type of bonus that I was getting from my job. So I would say at the time that I was ready to leave, I probably would have had at most 2 months of expenses covered with my savings, which is probably 2 months better than I thought I would have. But I also was in a position where I had a big in case of emergency nest egg by rolling over 401ks for my job, doing the rollover IRA. I have stock options for my job, where, you know, if things got bad, I could sell my stock and cash out and be okay. Those are things that I feel like a lot of people usually don't have. So in terms of cash on hand, I didn't have it. But if things got rough, I always had that in the, like a worst of the worst case scenarios, because you know the penalties for drawing out 401k and all of that. But to Rich's point earlier, dude, I was unhappy to the point where I was just about to say, yo, I'm about to be a starving artist. I'm about to be the next come up story where I'm waiting tables. Y'all would have came into a restaurant. Jeff, listen, what you doing out here? Why you waiting tables? Everything all right? It turned into the straight starving artist, because at that point I made the decision, because you'll hear a lot of stories about people who are put in positions in their job where you know they're building a case against you, but you know they don't have a real case. It's just, yo, he does his job. We really can't say he's bad at his job. But we got to get him out of it. It's almost like the stories you hear about marriages where you're just here for the kids. We're just here for the job, to get the job done. But I'd been in corporate America and worked enough to know they really didn't value what I was doing or wanted me there. They just wanted an excuse or were just looking for something so that they can take whatever steps they wanted to take. And I have too much pride to get fired or for to let somebody fire me. Yeah. So for me, I would say in that sense, I didn't really have enough to go off of, but it just so happened that, you know, I was interviewing for a year and a half and I was interviewing and I just so happened to get an opportunity. But I think to answer your question, Marcus, in terms of buying back your time, you have your time already. It's just a matter of what you're doing with it. There's 24 hours in a day. You guys talk about side hustles at nauseam. I could have sat down and said, you know, I'm going to do this stuff here and there and whatever happens, happens. But once I got the energy and the motivation to really want to do this as a full time, I put whatever time I could into it, which weekends, nights, working, you know, writing every day, putting out blogs, buying camera equipment, recording myself, shooting my own stuff, using help from people in the industry and people who I knew where I wanted to get to make connections and to get connected to different outlets that would send me places and build up my portfolio. That was the biggest thing. You know, when you build up a portfolio, it doesn't matter how sophisticated it is. It's your portfolio. You could be working for the smallest paper in the country, but that's still journalism. That's still you working and showing examples of what you can do. And there's some great people out there that are doing things in all fields that you don't know about.
Yes.
But I don't know if I really answered your question, but I do think in terms of bringing back time, like the whole notion of that invested in buying back. Did you mean it from the loan perspective?
Yeah, I'd say it's both. And you did answer it. It's a matter of, I do think it's a mindset. And that's probably what's more important. And you can do it in a formulaic or a math way. She was saying that by making these early payments, those are, and she had gotten the math broken down. I'll get it in the show notes. But she was saying the exact amount of money that you could put towards the average school loan, which, you know, the average student's graduating with between $30,000 and $37,000 in debt now each month. So if you put $25 towards it, that was like a month taken off on the back end. And so she just did the math for if you did those type of payments. Yes, it doesn't go down from month to month, but in the long term, you are getting those months back in your life, which thus you are literally buying back time for you to, you know, do whatever you want. In this case, it would have been at 35. And to your earlier comment, it's the same advice that my coworker gave me. And he was, you know, maybe 7 years older than me at the time, but it's those golden handcuffs and similar. And I would say that's I'm trying to tread carefully here, but I'm good at my job. But I couldn't say that I love my job. And what I've kind of come to my coming of heart moment recently was I think I just don't like work. And my job is fine. I do different jobs that I enjoy and I'm good at. And there's, you know, obviously skills, you know, because I've promoted up the career ladder that prove that I'm good at my job. To me, work is my alarm going off at 7 a.m. and me sitting in traffic to go sit in an office or a cubicle for this defined period of time that someone else dictates, as Rich has said before, to pad someone else's profit line to fulfill or move their company or goals or dream forward for whatever 40 hours, 50 hours or 60 hours that they determine. And then when they're ready to dismiss me, I am, if I'm lucky and I have the time or energy, free to go do what I want. And usually, especially at this point on the other side with less years forward than behind, I'm too tired. Like I literally sometimes get home and all I want to do is shut down brain, mind, and through whatever libations that may take to get there.
Hopefully not your heart.
Exactly. And I was talking to Rich and the Financial Samurai on that episode. And there was really a period and I was so stressed. It was like the cartoons where my left eye would twitch. Like I would go to work and something would happen. It was always work related. It never happened on the weekends, never happened at any during other hour other than work. And they were joking like, you know, when your other eye twitches, I'm like, oh, both eyes start twitching. They both going to close, you know. And like, you know, this is the sacrifice that we're making so I can, what is the parable? You spend your time at work to afford the car, to drive to work, to afford the home that you're never in. It's a weird cycle.
I agree with that. Like, I agree with that 100%. It's you find what your motivation is. And then based off of that, that's how you build outward and figure out what you really want to do with this work in life thing, you know? I think for me, it wasn't even so. I think we all have inherent laziness in us. We can just be like, damn, I just don't want to. I'm going to do it when I do it. Or laziness versus procrastination or whatever have you. But I found for me, it was I'm most interested and I'm focused when I like what I'm doing. It just is what it is. When I like what I'm doing, I can look like the Zach Galifianakis meme where all of the mathematics symbols are on my face when I'm trying to calculate stuff. Yeah. That's me when I'm in and I'm locked into some a job or a project. that I'm working on, and I'm really enjoying it and liking it. Like my last 2 years at Bleacher Report, I've unlocked a level of consciousness and creativity that I didn't know I had, that I always thought I legit feel like a Super Saiyan. I reached a level and I don't got to go in a hyperbolic chamber for a year's time. I don't have to be killed and go to the kings of the other worlds to train. Like it's legit there. And I realized partially it's because I like what I do. And this is my inherent talent that's shining through. So I have a theory, right? Everybody here, and this is not to get all Shangri-La on y'all or whatever, but you know, like Shambhala for all my Full Metal Alchemist fans. But I think everybody is born with a talent, and a talent is a natural ability that you could just wake up and do something. Everybody is good at something, and it takes you a while to find it. Some people find it when they're kids. Some people find it when they're teenagers. Some people find it when they're 50, 60 years old. But once you do discover what that talent is that you have and you apply yourself, that's the goal. That's one of the goals in life, is to find what you're good at and do it. And if you can do it and make money off of it and make it your profession, that's a plus plus. That's an ultimate plus. And I do think for me, my social media, journalism, just digital media in general, was what I was always good in, because I love communicating with people. Like these guys will tell you, like I love conversation. I like talking to people. I like discussing. I like interviewing people. I love doing that. I love conversing with people and finding out new things and learning stuff every day and being outgoing. And I also love technology. So doing stuff with social media and doing stuff with digital media in this age in general, those are two skills that you need and two passions that you need. And even if you'd have told me 20 years ago that I would aspire to be on air talent, I'd have told you that you're crazy, or I would have said I must have found out where the money was and was going there, because that's the only way I was going to be on somebody's camera doing stuff. But then I think about in college, I was a stepmaster and I love stepping, and I love stepping in front of crowds and performing. And these were the type of things that I always did. I taught myself Photoshop in an intersession after joining my organization, because there was a period of recovery. and I figured I needed to recover and do, get some food and learn some skills. So I did that, and it all came natural. So I figured out what it was that I wanted to do and what I was good at. And I was fortunate enough to get the assistance, the mentorship, and just believing in myself and having that generate into the breaks that I needed to get into a field. And now, yeah, if it ain't doing this, I don't know what else I'm going to be doing in this career path. But I know for a fact I'm not going back to corporate America, yeah, unless I'm somebody's CEO.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you on that, man. And you know, I will say, of all the people that I followed over the years and know over the years, you're one of the few that are actually living the dream, where you've made this transition. And of course, no matter what job you go to, even if you love it, there are going to be days that suck. But you've actually made this transition. Like, I remember you talking about moving into social media stuff years ago, and now you're actually there. And what I've seen is that for a lot of people, it's usually not just make the quick switch. Usually you end up taking a stepping stone job in between, and it sounds like that's what Comcast was for you. So what did you do, I guess, in that time before you left the previous gig? But how did you, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, but how did you start preparing to make that transition so you could get the role at Comcast that would put you closer to what it was you ultimately wanted to do?
So that's a great question. The transition was easier to go into the Comcast job, because the Comcast job was similar to what I was already doing. It wasn't a shift. So it was internal consulting versus external consulting. And for those who don't know, external means my job goes to other clients, like outside clients, like banks and technology companies, and I would sit there and work with them. Internal is the internal within the company. So that was the biggest change from external to internal. If you know anybody who works in a consulting or advisory job, when you work external, you're always told that like internal is like is the escape from the grind of external consulting. And it definitely is an upgrade, in my opinion, depending on what your lifestyle is, et cetera, what you can deal with. But that was one of the reasons why it was a seamless transition because I was going from similar work where I was versus where I was going. But in terms of preparing for stepping on that stone and being able to jump up to the next stone.
Yeah.
The first year, like I said, the first year I was working. And the thing was, I loved what I was doing at first. I loved what I was doing and I was able to do everything else I was doing on the side. So I had that for a couple of years. I had that perfect mix between your main gig that you're excelling in and doing your thing, and then your side hustle that's building up and that you're also excelling at. It's really like what I would see you and Marcus doing now.
Mm.
That was where I was, but just not as enthused as you guys are about both. I was more enthused with the side hustle, but that's how your side hustle becomes your main hustle and your dream eventually. It should. That's a natural progression, but it became detrimental when I saw where I felt I wasn't being appreciated, that my work wasn't being appreciated. Then I just stopped liking the work. And that's the other thing. It's scary to think about the people that are out there that are great at their job and don't even like me.
Yeah.
I'm talking about proficient at what they do and they don't even like it. It reminds me of when Jay-Z would say, I'm not a rapper. I'm just a hustler who knows how to rap. I'm like, damn, I better not even try to study to be a rapper. If you're a hustler who knows how to rap and you can do this, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's pretty impressive. That you know, that's not even what you hear for. You know what I mean? Or other rappers who stunt and say like, yo, I was selling kicks. This rap thing is a hobby. Or an artist. I did a story, just a quick tangent. I did a story for Bleacher. Well, actually, it's coming out about, by the time this just drops, you'll see it, about a Oklahoma City Thunder fan from Japan who stumbled on the NBA, like just channel surfing, stumbled on the NBA, got enamored with Russell Westbrook, became a Thunder fan on the spot, and started drawing in recaps of the games and milestones. She only took like 2 or 3 art classes, like formalized art. But she picks up and it looks like Calvin and Hobbes or a comic strip. Hmm. She had this talent all along and it took the NBA to stimulate that. Hmm. And a love that she didn't know. And now she can draw. I mean, it's not like she's going to be on Marvel Comics or whatever, but for no formal training to be able to convey your emotions through art when you weren't even thinking that way. You're a stay-at-home mom. You know, you just live in life and that's what motivated you. It's something to think about in ourselves with what talent we have yet to discover because we weren't motivated. And the motivation for me to buy into my talent was when I was feeling underappreciated. Because what if I wasn't? I may have never made the jump. I may have been content where I was and just tried to maneuver my way in the company, try to get promoted if I wanted to, or try to go into other business lines. So in essence, me souring on what I was doing and the company in turn showing me that I wasn't really valuable or that group showing me like my experience, my negative experiences, I would have never made the jump. Fully.
Yeah. And another thing, and I think it goes back to the time as well. And it's something that's helped me. And I think that you're saying here is also having a finish line. So it's been moved back for me because there's some other things that I wanted to feel more comfortable with solidifying more so on the healthcare side and everything like that. Because going back to that, you know, where I am in age, that's something that I wasn't considering in that original budget. But something that came out recently was it was talking about someone who early retired, and I think he was 51 or something to that effect. So I think people get caught up in this, and it's really big right now, the FIRE, financial independence, retire early. And I think people here retire early and they're like, oh, that's 30. That's 35. They assign this predetermined age. And it's just completely untrue. It's just this thing that this burden that we put on ourselves. But I do think it's helpful. And I think it would help others as well as part of that transition to go, this is what I'm working towards. This is my finish line. This is my pivot point. And this is my transition. I think some people are like, well, I don't want to do a 5-year plan. I don't want to do a 10-year plan. But I think it's been good for me to know, well, this is what's on the other side of that particular hill. There'll be more hills for me to climb, but I'll be done with this one. This corporate mountain, I'll be done with. I'm just going to go climb other mountains. And it took me a long time to accept that about myself. And maybe that's just something that comes with age. I don't know if it's age or maturity. Is people kept asking me to define their box or to come up with a description that fit in their box. And more recently, I'm just like, I want to do what I want to do. I'll figure that part out. Y'all don't worry about me. It's my money. It's my savings. Like, I don't know why y'all are so concerned about what I'm going to do, but I want to wake up with no alarm. That's goal number one. If I could do something where I don't wake up to alarm, you know what? I'm already on vacation. I'm already retired. And then I'll just figure the day out. I'll figure the week out, and I'll figure out however much money I need to make. Because another thing that I think folks need to hear here, and I think you're saying, is the corporate structure is inherently designed to generally move you up or move you out. A lot of conversations I've had recently, and Rich knows because they're frustrating, and you might have had these as well. I'm building up to a question here. Is when I went to these organizations, and it's a much more difficult conversation each time as I actually grow in my career, they're like, well, you've been doing this for 10 years. Why don't you keep on doing it? And I'm like, do you not hear the questions you're asking me right now? That question is the answer. You like, I don't want to do this 10 more years. I don't want to do this 10 more seconds. So that's why I'm here having this conversation with you. But it seems to be that it's literally the corporate ladder. I guess it's not the something horizontal. I don't know, corporate walkway, because it's just designed to move you up. And then, like you said, when you do something not status quo, like I don't want to move up. I talk to a lot of millennials. They're like, I don't want your job. I don't ever want to work the hours and go to the meetings that you go to. It looks miserable. And I'm like, oh, you're ready to promote? They're like, no, I'm not. I don't want to do that. And some of our most difficult succession planning has come from people like, I don't want to move up in this pathway or structure that y'all have set up for me. And as my friend said, it's these golden handcuffs. It's do this or you have to figure it out. And it sounds like you've figured that out. I wanted to draw attention to that. Like, if people are relying on their job to define the next 5 or 10 years for them, they're going to give you 2% raises and promote you up the corporate ladder. And the best advice I got from a mentor was, look 2 levels above you. And if that person either isn't doing what you want to do, or you wouldn't be happy in that position, you need to start looking outward, inward somewhere, because that's all that lies ahead. Not in a bad way, but that is what the job is designed to do. It's designed to maintain status quo.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to say. Did you find that to be true? And then how did you break out? I mean, it sounds like you beat the Matrix.
I made the right decision the one time.
took the right pill.
Yeah. So what are those things? So you were at this point in the Comcast gig, you know, perhaps not feeling appreciated. You're ready to break out, break free from the Matrix. And you talked about some of the steps that you took to even get into the Comcast gig, given that it was related to what you were doing. So what was next at that point to make the leap from Comcast to Bleacher Report?
It was a lot of applying for jobs, resume workshops, rewriting resumes, making multiple versions of resumes. It was getting help. It was getting advice. Rich has probably seen 85 versions of my resume.
I think I got one on this computer.
Right, you probably do. It's funny. The one compliment that you gave me was when I recreated my resume for all of the freelance stuff that I did in a normal resume format. And I will never forget, you were like, yo, if I didn't know any better, you made like our relationship blog and all the stuff that you did sound like a Fortune 500 company. But the thing is, one, you know, you dress for the job that you want and you present yourself for the job that you want in whatever light that you want to be portrayed in. And the thing is, just because it wasn't a Fortune 500 company doesn't negate the work that you put in. So that's why I would put everything that we did, because if you think about all the stuff, think about all the stuff you do for podcasting. Think about all the stuff that you did for writing. That's like 85 jobs, bro, in one.
Yeah.
And then you break out everything from, and for those of you who haven't worked on a podcast from pillar to post, there's about 5 or 6 different jobs that on a sophisticated, professional, this is your everyday day job podcast, you don't see. There's production, there's direction, there's writing, there's technical editing, there's post-production, and you do all of this. It's like the old Heyman in Living Color 15 job joke. Like, you have 15 jobs when you're doing these podcasts and people don't see it. So that's one piece of advice that I would give, I guess, is think about everything. If you have a side hustle, think about everything the side hustle encompasses and write it down, like all your tasks. And you may find that you're doing the job of five or six other people, and that just helps bolster what you're doing. So I did all of that. I used Google. I used my resources and really try to comprise the best resume possible. Quick rant, I hate the job application process. I hate 100%. I hate uploading resumes, and I already have the damn resume and I got to re-input everything that I uploaded. I personally hate the idea of cover letters. I just hate that process when you go online, and then when you know the inner workings of companies and how trigger words capture resumes, when you upload online, it's just like, yo, just give me the job, dog. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what the hell? But and I know there's a lot of people who are frustrated with that process too, but it's just so annoying where technology is so sophisticated and we don't utilize it to the fullest in the job application process. And I understand the different philosophies where you ain't going to fill out a cover letter and a resume, then maybe you don't want a job. But when you're seeing the same type of cover letters over and over again, I do think the differentiating part is the person itself.
Right.
That is what it is. But for my job, I just built my resume, continued to do what I was doing, and I just applied. It was, you know, let me also say, like, the opportunities that I got at Comcast and everywhere else, they were great. But when you work in corporate America for a while, it's like the Wizard of Oz. You know who Oz is. You know the man behind the curtain. And then when you see all the corporate jargon and everything, it's like you have the glasses. It's you are the Matrix. All I saw was zeros and ones at my job. And I saw everything for what it was. And I knew why certain moves were being made. And I just didn't want to play that game anymore. So I was interviewing. I was interviewing and I was applying and interviewing and I was applying. And there's people who do it for years and years and don't get hits. And I started looking for jobs. The catalyst, my watershed moment for knowing that I needed to get out was during a performance review. And you tell me, and know this is a free flowing conversation, Rich, but I'd love to hear you guys' perspective, especially you, Rich, on this. And I probably told you the story, Rich. I had a performance review where the manager or the director, whoever, who was writing my review came in and they were telling my performance manager, which is in most companies the person who's really directly responsible for your career outside of yourself and helps guide you and gives you your final ratings and everything. But we're having this meeting about my rating. The rating that I get was, it was like the baseline rating. So if you're in a 5-point scale, it was a 3. If it was a 9-point scale, it was like standard.
So basically it was like meets expectations.
Meets expectations. There it is. I was trying to think of the word, but yeah, it was meets expectations. And no, I'm so sorry. It wasn't. It was like,
you got multiple moments.
Right. It's all coming together, but making it quick, right? My defining moment was when in that meeting, they started making meets expectations into tiers, which was funny to me, where it was like meets expectation mid, high, and low. Instead of giving people the exceeds expectations, they started tiering it so that they had more to place people in buckets, which is, once again, I see the zeros and ones. I see Oz wearing the Yeezy boosts behind the curtain. Like, yo, you ain't a wizard. You're a man, right? You're a man who wears Yeezys. So they tell me all these things that they had wrong with me and my work. But I never heard them throughout the duration of the project. All I got was good job, you know, little things here and there, correct, because nobody's perfect, contrary to companies' beliefs. To get exceed expectations, I don't think you need to be perfect. But I got blindsided. And I explained, and I'm on the meeting, and I said, well, if you guys had all these issues with me, why didn't I hear it throughout the project? You see me all the time. We're in constant communication. Why have you guys not told me this? And they tried to say that they did, but I had the receipts to show that they didn't. And it ended up with what they were saying. It was a he said, she said situation. But I had all of the evidence where it pointed to, you never told me, I don't think I should get this rating because you never gave me an opportunity to correct these alleged issues you had. And my performance manager basically said, well, if your manager is saying it, it's got to be true. This is your rating. I remember that meeting because I was in a conference room and I got out and I guess it wasn't as quiet of a conference room as I thought to block out sound because some of my coworkers were just like, damn.
They stand up and give you the slow clap.
Right. It's like when you see somebody get dunked on and you're all just looking up at the scoreboard like you're shaking your head like, damn, that shit is crazy. But But they were looking at me like that. And it was at that time where I said, I am going to start looking for jobs. I remember I got on the phone. I was hitting headhunters contact you all the time. This was the one time where I said, I'm ready. You know, you know, make it so. Like, it's like you're always getting those calls. It's like Kanye's story at the end of College Dropout when he's like, you still got that deal with Rockefeller? I was hitting my headhunters. I was going online. And I actually was interviewing for a job similar to my field. And I was going out on interviews. I was, you know, getting mad hits for because my resume to that point, contrary to their belief, my resume was solid. And I was going on interviews. I was going on interviews for stuff similar to what I was doing in my day job. And that's when I had the epiphany to say, I don't want to do this anymore. I remember going home on the train and I was just like, yo, I don't want to do this anymore. Have you seen the viral video of the girl flipping out on the New York subway because she had the internship and there was delays because of sick passenger?
Nah.
I have to go to my internship. And I felt that on a spiritual level. Food all the time when the subway is delayed. I felt her so much. But that was similar to what I had where I was like, yo, I don't want to do this anymore. So I called up the headhunters and I told them to take them off my list, take everything off my list because I just don't want to do this type of work anymore. I'd rather not work. And then I started applying on my own to try to get all of these jobs in media. Wasn't hearing anything. I got close with certain interviews. And this is all off of freelance work, by the way. And plus a little bit of my professional resume. And I was getting the interviews and I continued to get the interviews. And I was just, and this is all while I was still working. Because I've always preached not quitting your job before you get the new job.
Yeah.
Like, you should keep working. But my frustrations got to the point where I was ready to quit cold turkey, just grind to do it. Because I do commercial acting, I do a whole bunch of other stuff. I was ready to go full force in that until I found the job I want. That's how unhappy I was. And it just so happened that I got the link. You know, I was able to get in. And being fully transparent, it was someone I knew who worked in a high level position who knew I was looking to get out of the industry and said, yo, send me your resume. I can't guarantee you or give you a job. The people you work with are going to have to determine that, but I can get your foot in the door. And that's all we ask for, is a foot in the door. Let me use my own ability to make my case why I should or shouldn't get the job. Let me not get lost in the minutiae of automated processes and everything like that. And through that link, I was able to get in front of the people I need to get to, state my case. And clearly, you know, I'd said something right because I got the job. And, you know, I would love to have sit here and tell you and your listeners, you know, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and I did all of that, and blah, 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 and all that.
You did, though. I mean, you've been doing the work for years to make this transition.
Right, right. I'm not going to sit here and diminish what I did, but you do need breaks. Sometimes, especially when you're transitioning to another career, I'm not going to be ignorant or I'm not going to forget the people who helped me or the breaks that I needed to at least get a look. But I do also believe work is the effort that you put in order to be there when those breaks occur, then you can profit off of them or you can use them to your advantage. And I was fortunate enough to be able to do that.
And so with these types of positions, they always want corporate experience. And that's one thing I hear a lot of people say is when you're making a career change and even when you get interviews, a lot of times you end up getting shot down and they say you don't have corporate experience. Or even myself, I've shared resumes with hiring managers and I'm like, this person probably has the skills. They've been doing stuff on the side. And they're like, well, we want to see that in a corporate environment. And you didn't have that corporate environment, social media experience. So what do you think helped you overcome that? And of course, the most obvious answer is you were doing stuff on the side, but there are companies that don't see that side hustle work the same as they see what's done in an office in a traditional work setting. So what do you think helped you overcome that? Was there a way that you positioned yourself during the interviews or how you made some of that side hustle work sound as far as the scope and scale?
I think for my situation, that's another dope question. Y'all are hitting me. I'm like, damn, we need to talk like this, like how we talk offline and have these more fulfilling conversations, right? But I think one thing that helped was the position that I was applying for was a new position in a new field. So they were looking for people from various walks of life. So it wasn't as regimented as normal job positions would be. for in terms of the skills they were looking for. They were looking for transferable skills and or hardcore experience in the field. And we work with freelancers all the time. So how could we diminish freelance experience when freelancers are a significant part of what we do, you know, or a good portion of what we do? We work with freelancers all the time. So how we look if somebody's applying for a position, oh, you only did freelance work? You know, not in our establishment do we allow non-corporate experience to fly. But one thing that I was able to do is the idea, I think, of transferable skills. I worked in a corporate environment for my entire career. So those tenets that you learn and those skills, they can go anywhere. So when I was applying, I did have that job on my resume, but I wrote it in a way, I described my day-to-day activities and all of that. I described it in a way that would correlate to what I was doing in social media. Those connections. So if you think about consultant, and Marcus will tell you, you think about consultant work, those skills you need in every job.
Right, right. Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that recently as far as public speaking. And I just feel there's transferable skills that are you need in every job.
Right. So for social media, you have to be able to write. You have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to present ideas and an execution plan. That's one of the core tenets of what I was doing in social media when I got hired. And, you know, and I was able to present what I was doing before with that. And I think once I got my foot in the door there, it was just about ideas and things and ideas that I had for stuff and how would I handle this situation? How would I handle that situation? Those core ideas. And so for me, for that particular position, I think it was more so about what I could create than where I created. But it's not everywhere.
Yeah, no, but that is a crucial distinction. And I recently wrote a piece. It hasn't went live yet, and I'll share that on the podcast when it does. But I recently wrote a piece where I talked about the importance of transferable skills. And so I'm letting you cook, but in the background, I'm dancing. I got my hands in the air. I'm pumping my fists like Tiger Woods before he started doing shady things. Well, he was probably doing shady things while he was pumping his fists. But that's crucial. So the one other thing I wanted to ask you, and then we'll move toward the wrap, because I know this has been a great conversation. As far as LinkedIn, did you do anything differently there? Because a lot of times what will happen is somebody will update their resume and then their LinkedIn profile may say something different. So if I, as a recruiter, look at your resume and then go to your LinkedIn profile, it's possible it could tell two different stories that would ultimately be kind of confusing. So did you do anything different with your LinkedIn during this process, kind of leading up to you going into the promised land?
Nah, bro. I don't think I really update. I kept my LinkedIn updated. What I did was I added all of my freelance work to my LinkedIn. So it would be crazy if you were searching for consulting work and then you popped up on my profile and you saw all this other stuff that you do. The one thing that recruiters will always say is, how do you have the time to do all of this stuff? Like, this is crazy. You're on red carpets, you're writing, and you do this full time? Like, how do you have the time to do it? But I don't know if how integral LinkedIn was to my process, because I was applying using my resume. So no one was really seeking me out through LinkedIn. I was doing the seeking. So in terms of LinkedIn, I just added all of my freelance work and made it sound in the LinkedIn voice. Yeah. And now I adjusted my LinkedIn page to look more media. I think I've taken off everything that's not in media. I've added certain stuff. I've changed certain stuff around just so that I can attract more media professionals to my LinkedIn. And it's always good just for like the networking and everything like that, and just always having that prepared and up to date. But in terms of doing it for the job process, I mean, maybe that would have probably been a great idea in retrospect. In hindsight, that would have been a great idea to modify it. But that's how I got the Comcast job. I was found on LinkedIn. I think I told you that before.
Yeah.
They randomly, when I was looking, I started looking for jobs because I was ready to leave the last place. And I got hit up on LinkedIn. It's the same situation. Newer org developing. They're growing the company. They're looking for people. You know, I'm sure you know, Rich, about the recruiting hustle where you're looking for people and you're like, yo, I'm about to go on LinkedIn. I'm about to hit these keywords. Let me find some people. Yep. guess that's how I was found. And they reached out to me like, yo, you know, we got this opportunity at Comcast. And from New York, the only thing you hear about Comcast is from your friends outside of New York who always have something bad to say about it. Right. So I'm like, damn, Comcast, the cable company that everybody slanders on Twitter. But okay, you know, whatever. But I was still disillusioned. I didn't want to do anything in that field. And I was just like, yo, you know what? It sat in my inbox for a few days. And I was talking to people about it like, yo, I'm about to just quit, take an entry level job at some magazine or somewhere and just build from the bottom up. I'm down. That's what I wanted to do. Then I started having more conversations and I was like, you know what? Let me check this Comcast thing out. Let me see what it is. And I did. I liked what they were saying. We had a great interview process and I got hired. So for those who may sleep on LinkedIn, that's how I got my job before this one.
Cool, man. And so this has been super insightful. You killed it, bro. You've been killing it. So talking a little bit or real briefly about kind of some of the side projects, and you've been on the red carpet. So who are some of the people that you're most proud that you've got to interview or meet through some of that other work that you've been doing in the media space?
Well, first, much love to Remy Ma. She was my first, fresh out of jail. She got off her bid doing her press run. That was the first celebrity interview I've ever done. And I did it as well. It was an audio. It was a transcript interview, but that was the first one I ever did.
That's a hot start.
Shout to the YPF2. They gave me, you know, got that link, got that opportunity. That was the first one I did. So she's always like, I always remember her. She was dope, gave me great answers. And that's also the first time where I said, oh, I really can do this. Because you know how like you're good at something, but when you see a result, you're like, oh, no, I am good. Like, I can do this. This isn't just belief. There's proof. So she was like, after that interview was probably one of the first sparks for me to continue doing my journey, my media journey. Ava DuVernay was dope. I got to interview Oprah. That's always something to put on your...
Wait a minute. I did not know about Oprah. How am I not recalling Oprah? When did you interview Oprah?
It was on the Selma red carpet, which was my first red carpet I ever did. So the first red carpet I ever did was Selma. So you talking Tyler Perry or Oprah, Ava, Common was there, a bunch of people. It was fire. Like that, and that was like one of the first ones that I did. And after that one, that was when I also said like, yo, this is cool. I'd love to do this full time, right? And be an entertainment correspondent and do all of that. But, you know, interviewing the cast of Power is always great because 50 Cent is one of the best interviewers out there because he's so real. He doesn't give you fabricated stuff and he tells you what's on his mind. And he always has something that when you hear it, you're just like, yo, he'll drop a gem or two on you and you're just like, oh, okay. I wasn't even expecting that, but he always has something interesting to say. But yeah, those are like things that I always remember. I interviewed Denzel at the Fences screen. I interviewed Denzel and Viola Davis.
Yo, I got the Arthur clenched fist right now, man.
So that was always good. But and then the first time I did Black Girls Rock, where all the leading women, black women in all areas were there. It was good, man. Like I've been very fortunate and blessed to get these opportunities with not as much experience doing them, but with the grind that I was putting on online. The people who helped me, who gave me those links, who advocated for me, because I think there's also a lot of it's sad at times when people are in certain positions and won't advocate for you, even if they know that you have the skill, because they don't want to mess up what they got going on. Mm. But I think if we were to do that a little bit more often, you know, just throw the alley-oop. If I can't dunk it, if I can just lay it up, or if I can finish the play, that's not on you. Just throw a perfect pass and I'll let me handle the rest, you know? But I wouldn't have been in that opportunity. I wouldn't have gotten those opportunities if it wasn't for those people. And I'm just looking forward to making more memories, man.
That's what's up, that's man. And the list is going to keep growing. And I'm hoping that as a result of this conversation, a lot of people go check out your work. It's been great chatting with you, man. So where can the people find you on social media?
All right. So you can find me on all social media at Jeff J Says. You can go to @FanBrosShow. That's our podcast. We do video, audio, all geek and nerd culture. @NonstopCulture is my outlet that I created. And it's really been reviews and stuff that I do on TV shows, some interviews that I'm doing as well. I'm always on and off with the podcasting. So I could tell you it's not consistent at this moment. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do there. But you also see it's more so a repository for a lot of the work I do. And it's funny. It was a training ground for me to build up my skills and hone my skills in media and on camera to get other opportunities. Then I keep getting other opportunities and it's like, well, damn, well, what do I do with my child? Like, do I still grow my child? Or I tell them it's you're 18, get out the house, go get a job so that me and your mom can finally have peace and quiet. But yeah, you can find me there, and follow Bleacher Report. We do amazing things over there, and you would be supporting me and helping me to make a case why I need to get more money and more promotion and more shine, and they love it. So definitely hit us up there.
Good stuff, man. So yeah, Jeff, it's been great having you on the podcast, and yeah, really appreciate you joining us, man.
Thank you. I hope this ain't the last time.
Nah, bruh, nah.
Yo, I thought that was a good one, man. I feel like I'm ready to hustle season my way up out of here, you know what I'm saying? So I appreciate Jeff for coming on the show and showing us how it's done.
Definitely, man. And we're going to hear more stories like that. So people who aren't necessarily experts in their craft or in their field, who are just out there enduring, I guess, the everyday struggle, because it's also struggle season in many ways for many people. And so, yeah, he dropped a lot of gems. You'll hear us talk about career transitions again. And I also had an article that came out about transferable skills specifically that was published on JobWell's digital magazine, The Well. And so we included a link to that in last week's newsletter, and we'll include a link in this week's show notes. So you can check that out and make sure you're ready to go if you're trying to make a big career move.
Yes, sir.
And so if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. I almost forgot what I was supposed to ask for. As we like to say, the more people we reach, the more people we help. And today's review comes from Q-H-A-U-R-I. I'm not going to try to pronounce that. One of my favorites. Thank you. I didn't say that with all that much enthusiasm, even though there were exclamation points, but I'm going to let it cook. You two are so relatable, and I was hooked after listening to a few shows about a year ago while studying for the bar. I love your show and always know I will be informed and entertained by every episode. I appreciate y'all with a heart.
So I'm going to go ahead and say congratulations, because I have faith that you then went on to pass that bar. So appreciate you listening to the show while you were dropping them 5 stars. And shout out to the people out there that are dropping those 5 stars. We do see those. Send them as well. Actually, I did drop one in there. And there was one a few weeks ago that Rich sent over. You know, it got a little dusty in the room. You know, I had a little something in my eye that I had to wipe away, man. It wasn't tears. Just a little something salty, something a little watery, but it wasn't tears. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate those 5 stars. We do take a look at those.
And I think that review is coming up once we figure out how to read it in a shorter version.
And if you want to follow us on the other social medias, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances, and at Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts. And actually, by the way, shout out to the Facebook group. We see y'all interacting in there. And you can find us on Twitter at the Marcus Garrett, 1T on Twitter, 2Ts everywhere else on earth. Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones around the internet.
I am.
And don't forget to grab that free 15-minute money plan and send us your insights and feedback by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, because we will be looking to improve that tool for future use.
Definitely. And if you just want to shoot us a comment, question, concern, whatever it is, something's not working, you can hit us up at info@paychecksandbalances.com. But that's it for this week. Thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.